The News and Public Affairs Department at KWED brings to you the Saturday Topic, a weekly discussion of current events. Good morning, I'm Darren Dunn. You know, there are special times dedicated on the calendar, all sort of observances that occur each and every year, and on the calendar, I know there's a dedicated time for child abuse awareness, child abuse prevention periods, but that's really not something that we should just be thinking about for one specific time of the year. That's something that we should be thinking about all year long. Really, and more simply put, every day we should be thinking about that. And that's one of the reasons why today on the Saturday Topic program, we are glad to bring back our friend Christy Williams. She's the executive director over at the Guadalupe County Children's Advocacy Center. Christy, good morning. Welcome to the Saturday Topic.
Thanks, Darren.
All right. I wanted to try to lay the foundation for, you're not just here to talk about, well, it's Child Abuse Prevention Month. Yes, that's true for the month of April, but more broadly, we should be thinking about this, right? Every day. This is not something that really should be far from our hearts and minds.
Absolutely. I think if we were able to do that and just recognize and report whenever we suspect abuse, that we can really make an impact on children's lives in the future.
You've been doing this for a long time. Did you think you would be doing this for this long?
No, probably not. I don't know. It's hard to know what I thought 21 years almost 21 years ago now. Yeah.
So now as the executive director, you are so fully immersed in every pretty much aspect of the agency here. Tell the people who are not familiar with the Children's Advocacy Center what exactly it is that you guys do there.
So we are a nonprofit agency. We work with children and families when there are allegations of child abuse and neglect. Anything that a child would have to talk to law enforcement or child protective services about, they can refer those children to us to conduct forensic interviews, for us to provide family advocacy sessions or counseling, and really just case management and case review to make sure that cases aren't falling through the cracks. So our partners are law enforcement, Department of Family and Protective Services, our local prosecutor's office, CASA, which is court-appointed special advocates, and we're in the group with Central Texas, and medical professionals, mental health professionals, all here in Guadalupe County.
I love the alignment that's taken place over the years and the expansion, really, of some of those partnerships that have taken place over the years, because in the early days, I remember the idea was, we want to make sure we don't victimize these children anymore then they have to be as part of the process that's supposed to be helping them. Now you're offering these additional services, but let's go back to what it was like before there were children's advocacy centers. It was really, really difficult for a kiddo to come forward and say, make an outcry, and then have to make that outcry over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's really why Children's Advocacy Centers were formed, was to bring together this multidisciplinary team to try to minimize the impact that the cases have on children and families. So when you're talking about a criminal case, there's lots of different things that law enforcement need or prosecutors will eventually need from a child or from a family. And when you're looking at it from a child safety standpoint, there's a lot of things that the Department of Family and Protective Services, or back then we called them Child Protective Services, need in order to do their investigation. And so if we can work together as a team and communicate well together and collaborate well together, we can ask less of the families and less of the children. We can do a one-time forensic interview of the children so that we're not re-victimizing them, having to talk to multiple people once it's been reported. We educate the community to try to keep children from having to tell their story more than to their original outcry witness or person prior to being referred to our center. And so it's really about taking this process, taking this institution of, you know, investigations that is designed for adults to make it as friendly as possible for children and for the people who care about them.
Christy Williams is our guest on the Saturday Topic program. She's with the Guadalupe County Children's Advocacy Center. So, Christy, I'm thinking about, we're trying to raise awareness. We're trying to offer prevention for child abuse, child neglect as well. But I keep thinking about we've had these conversations before, and my hope is always, well, we're going to start to see the numbers trend in a different direction. Where are we now in this community? What are the numbers suggesting?
Well, last year, in 2023, we served 872 children. In 2024, we served 903. That doesn't really tell us a ton about whether or not abuse is happening more. What it does indicate in some ways is our population is growing. People are more aware of reporting abuse. It doesn't necessarily mean that there is actually more abuse taking place. It's just we're serving more kids. And that has been a consistent pattern. From the time that we opened all the way up to COVID, the numbers just were on a steady incline. COVID, we had a dip. There's just a lot going on during that time that created that. And then we've been steadily increasing those numbers again since then. So, you know, with as much as Guadalupe County has grown population-wise, we expect that we would have more people coming through our doors just because of the sheer nature of how many people are in our county. But we definitely want to see smaller numbers in the future and are doing as much as we can to educate the community about what to do if they suspect abuse, but also how to kind of protect themselves and how to keep their kids safe and for kids to have some information about what they can do if they've ever felt uncomfortable or thought something's not quite right about what's gone on in their life.
So I as we've had these conversations in the past, I always seem to think, well, we definitely are doing a better job of trying to help these kids once they're in the system, also trying to help educate them a little bit. But then I think on the other side, as a society, what are we missing that we aren't addressing this at a level where we are really starting to break through and helping people to understand it doesn't have to be this way. Whatever you're feeling, whatever anger or frustration you have to be, it doesn't mean you have to hurt somebody you love, or it doesn't mean that this situation has to happen, or if you were hurt yourself, your pain doesn't then need to turn into somebody else's pain. Aren't we missing something there?
I think that a lot of this stems from really needing to do a better job of working with kids when they are in their trauma. So when we don't address trauma in childhood and we have people then grow up who still have not addressed their trauma and addressed their hurt and addressed their, you know, insecurities or their lack of attachment to other humans or maybe unresolved sexual tension in their lives, then those are the kinds of things that then lend themselves to them potentially doing something to somebody else in the future. It's that whole cycle of abuse kind of thing. So, you know, that happens in research and happens in domestic violence. It happens in physical abuse. And if you were beaten as a child for making a mistake, you're more likely to do that to your child because you do what you know. And so for things like that, that's really just addressing them, getting help for them, making sure that we are normalizing things like therapy, that therapy is not a sign of weakness. It is a way to make sure that you can be a healthy part of society. And when it comes to sexual abuse and preventing that in the future, I really think, and CAC Texas, our parent organization, Children's Advocacy Centers of Texas, has been doing a lot of research in this area, but we've got to be taking care of juveniles who are alleged perpetrators and breaking that pattern of behavior before they become adults, because that is a significant portion of our adult perpetrators is people who have done things when they were younger and nothing happened. And so now they're an adult and they're doing that same behavior and there's bigger consequences for themselves, but also bigger consequences for the people that they're doing it to.
Krista Williams is our guest on the Saturday Topic Program. She is the Executive Director of the Guadalupe County Children's Advocacy Center. We talked about the numbers. We talked a little bit about the current situation. But I want to talk about what abuse means and what that actually looks like. Because I think if people have not had any encounters with it or adjacent to it, they may not understand what that is. Or they just have this vision of what they've seen on television or in movies. Abuse can take a lot of different forms, can it not?
Absolutely. What we primarily see at our center is child sexual abuse. That can be anything from making sexual innuendos to children, talking to them about sex in a way that is not something you should be saying to a child. It can be touching their bodies in a way that makes them uncomfortable. A lot of times those are the ways that those things get started, and they kind of grow from there. And so that's one of the ways that sexual abuse starts, is through kind of grooming techniques, which is what we just talked about. And then touching of sexual organs and showing sexual organs. And now we've got technology, and people are recording things or asking for pictures or sending pictures, or, you know, any of these technology facilitated crimes that are now happening to kids that didn't happen when we opened our doors necessarily. And that's really kind of where the sexual abuse goes. Sometimes it is between people of similar ages, but there is a power differential there. Most of the time, in 99% of the cases, the children know who their sexual offender is. And often it is a family member. And so that makes the dynamic of working with people who have been sexually abused really difficult, because they don't want to get their family or their loved ones in trouble, but they don't necessarily want the sexual abuse to continue. Then we also see physical abuse that can be harder for people to understand, because especially if they were, you know, spanked or whooped or hit when they were younger, then they might not see where that line is legally, where, you know, if they're leaving injuries or they're hitting in places that are vital organs, those are the types of things that can be damaging, or if they're breaking bones or things like that. So it's really about figuring out what took place, and was it beyond discipline? Was it an injury? Was it abuse? And was it done out of anger? Was it done out of discipline? What was the rationale for doing it? Sometimes people are just angry, frustrated, and they don't know how to express those emotions without hurting somebody. We also interview kids for domestic violence. So that can be any kind of partner violence. A lot of times kids try to intervene whenever that happens, and it turns into something different for them. And we have a lot of kiddos who have, you know, over the years, not in a year, witnessed violence that results in death. And so we have to interview kids because they witnessed their own parent die at the hands of someone else. And those can be incredibly difficult interviews to do.
Do you get much on the neglect side? I know that clearly the sexual, the physical abuse, those cases are definitely going to be referred to you. But on the neglect side, where kids are just not being taken care of the way they should be, or put in a situation that could be very dangerous for them, are there many of those cases coming through?
There's lots of those intakes coming through, but they don't necessarily come through the doors of the Advocacy Center. We offer services to our partners if there's any support that they need to support those families. But if that is the sole reason for that intake, they aren't likely to come through our doors. We have to have a referral from Child Protective Services or law enforcement in order to serve anyone. So we might know about some neglect that's been happening because somebody has made a report to the statewide hotline, which then we receive simultaneously to law enforcement and DFPS receiving it. But unless they actually say, we want you to serve this kid or this family, we aren't doing anything with those.
I asked you about types of abuse. What about types of abusers? Is there a profile that, generally speaking, fits a pattern of those who tend to abuse? Or is it just widespread, as many of the abuse cases are themselves?
It is absolutely widespread. If there was a way to pinpoint prevention efforts a bit more, because there's a profile that goes along with it, it would make it a lot easier, I think, to prevent. But our abuses come from every type of household, every socioeconomic status, every race, every ethnicity, every gender. It's really just the gamut of anybody.
You know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, Christy, you do this every day. So where's the hope that you find? Where do you find the hope that the work that you're doing is not just making a difference for the child that's directly in front of you at the moment, but more broadly is making a difference?
You know, sitting on this team is a real privilege. I get to see the entire picture from the moment these referrals are made, or the, you know, statewide intake reports are made, to the referral that's sent over to one of our departments. The kids who come in, I see, and they are often just, if you saw them in the store, you'd never know. They're bubbly and resilient and generally happy. And they come in and they do these interviews with specially trained people in this room that is hopefully as safe feeling as possible. And they leave and you can kind of see a lightness to them. They've shared their story. Somebody listened. And I see the team working so hard at making sure that information is gathered and they're building strong cases, or that they are clearing people who have been wrongly accused, because that is a huge part of what we do as well as a team. And then I see our team come together on a monthly basis and talk about our cases and make sure that nobody's falling through the cracks, because if a case is falling through the cracks, it's a kid or kids falling through the cracks. And I think the biggest hope probably out of all of that is seeing them when they go to counseling and they have goals for what they want to accomplish with counseling and they graduate and they have this sense of accomplishment of, I'm okay and I can do this and I can do whatever it is that they want to do in life. And you know, it's just amazing to see the resiliency of kids. And when we have really supportive and protective caregivers, once they find out what's happened, they wrap their arms around their kid and they make sure that they get everything that they need. That is a really amazing thing. And then several years down the road, because that's how our system works, we get to see justice in the courtroom. And that doesn't happen for every single case. Sometimes there's plea deals that take place and they don't actually go into a courtroom ever. And some cases don't even make it through that process. But we know at the Advocacy Center and on our team that we are doing everything that we can possibly do to the highest level that we possibly can for every kiddo that walks through our door. And it's a lot and it can be heavy, but just seeing their faces and seeing how they are when they come, like, they're not dreading coming to our office. There's hope there.
On the prevention side, I know you guys started Rad Kids, started the implementation of Rad Kids here locally. And we'll talk about, have you explain what that is, but what else are you doing on the prevention side to try to, let's avoid these things altogether. So what's being done prevention?
So we've always done prevention efforts with grownups. So we want to make sure that anybody that's working with kids knows what to look for. They know what they should be doing to keep kids safe, and they know what they should be looking for to possibly report if they ever see something or suspect something. So that means not just teacher training and daycare worker training and nurse and doctor training, but also training our patrolmen and making sure that all of our patrol officers know that this is the kind of glove you should use with these kinds of cases. If you get a call out on this kind of case, this is how you should look at this. This is, you need to be trauma informed. You need to know that there are certain words or phrases that you should use or not use because they might be off-putting to somebody. This is the kind of information that you need to gather, or you don't need to gather any of this kind of information. That'll be done later in the process. And so really working with them to try to make sure that we're doing and reaching that goal of minimizing the re-victimization. And then we work with youth to try to teach them about their bodies and about respecting others and what to do if they suspect something's happening with a friend, or what to do if they something is happening with them. And so in addition to the Rad Kids that you mentioned, we also teach program that's through the Monique Burr Foundation. So it's Teen Safety Matters and Child Safety Matters, depending on the age of the kid. And we work with Seguin ISD to get them support in doing that here in the Seguin ISD district. And then we do teach it out in the Navarro district as well.
You know, it's a tricky thing to navigate some of the political waters that sort of run alongside some of this. There's been a lot of talk about what parents' rights should be, and parents should have the right to decide what their kids are being taught or learning. And so I think you can, most of us could see why you would say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'm a parent, you're a parent, I want to have some voice in that. But then I also think, well, what about the kids who don't have the same sort of situation or support system at home, who don't have parents who might be as engaged or who are doing the best they can and just still might not be enough? How do we fill those gaps? And that's why I thought you guys getting into the schools and helping to do that was a great thing. That's not always been easy. I mean, it's sort of, you got these political waters, you still got to navigate to try to get to a desired outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there have been some changes in legislation in the past few years that have really been pro-parental rights, which, again, that's a great thing. But there's always another side to things. There's a flip side to, there's always pros and cons.
There's an unintended consequence often.
Right, right. Yeah. And so what we've seen in that unintended consequence is that there are some kids who are not getting the information that they need, because instead of the schools being told provide this curriculum, you know, forever, they've taught fifth graders about puberty and their bodies and what to expect with all of that. And, you know, there's a lot of dangers in this world when it comes to just bullying and dating violence and sexual abuse and physical abuse. And, you know, now there's sextortion and there's just all kinds of things that if we are not aware of and our kids aren't aware of, they are more likely to fall victim to something. But if they have the knowledge and the awareness of, hey, this is what this is, I recognize it, and now I can step away from it or tell somebody or say no, they're going to be a lot better off.
Yeah, and I think arming them with that information is incredible. And I think for us parents now, we may think we know, but the world has changed a lot. In the almost 21 years that you've been doing this, the technology changes have made kids more vulnerable in ways we could never have imagined. And we sort of have to wrap our minds around that and make sure we're arming them with the knowledge that they need and also offering protections to back that up.
Absolutely. And I think we're about to see the next great wave. And by great, I'm not saying positive, of technology facilitated dangers for kids. I mean, dangers for adults, even with AI. As AI is starting to really become prolific, it can be really difficult sometimes to determine if something is real or if it's a deep fake, or, you know, if there's enough pictures and audio of somebody, people are able to make things about them that weren't even them doing it, but it looks like they did.
Yeah, the deep fake stuff is really scaring me to death, because I've seen some of these videos and it really looks like, oh, that's real. But it's not. And I mean, it's just something, one more thing that we can make people worry about as they listen to this conversation. I don't want it to all be a bummer today, because I do think the work that you do is important. And I asked you about what gives you hope. Part of that has to be the support that you get from the community. Your nonprofit organization, the Guadalupe County Children's Advocacy Center, depends on the support of people who are generous enough to make donations or to support the things that you offer to help raise funds. You've got a number of things in the pipeline, so let's talk about some of those things. What's coming up?
We are going to be the beneficiaries of the First Friday Feast that the Geronimo Lions does. So that will be in April. I believe April 4th is the First Friday. And then after that, we have our golf tournament, which is the first one we've ever done. Out at the Bandit, it will be April 7th, which is a Monday. So, you know, it's a good way to not have to work, at least for the morning. And the weather should be really nice just because it's that time of year. And soon after that, we've got our bowling tournament, which is that same week, Saturday, April 12th.
Now, part of that is all, it's aligned to the Child Abuse Prevention Month. That makes sense that you try to cram some more stuff into April. But beyond that, you guys still have other things that are coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do our designer purse bingo. We do the one in Shirts every May, so May 15th this year. And then the one in Seguin we are already planning for will be November 13th. Those are super fun events. We fill the Coliseum here and give away lots of really great purses as prizes. And then we're going to do a casino night. We've done that event over in the Shirts area at the Blue Bonnet Palace in the past, but this year we're going to bring it to the Big Red Barn. And we're super excited about that. That will be July 12th. And then we are planning a giant bash that is going to be themed Make Their Future Bright. Because a lot of the kids that come through our doors for the first time don't have that vision of a bright future. They're not living in a bright world. Their palette is kind of gray. And we are doing everything that we can at the center to brighten that palette for them and make their future bright. So we're going to have a bash to go along with that theme. And our hope is to really do a much better job of serving our kiddos over on the west end of the county with that, hopefully with a new facility.
I love the idea of the bash and in trying to help make the future brighter for some of those kiddos who, you know, in some extreme cases, they went through this traumatic experience. They made the outcry. They got the support they needed. But on the flip side of that is their family life may have been completely upended by that. And now they've traded that trauma for something new that is also traumatic.
Yeah, it can be really disruptive to kids' lives to disclose what has happened to them. It changes everything, especially if it's a family member or a breadwinner that is in their family. So much happens after their disclosure that they probably didn't even realize would happen and had no idea of what to even brace themselves for.
I want everyone who's listening today to make a point to try to support all that you guys do. You've got events that you can support, but if they're just listening and saying, well, maybe I want to do something else. Maybe they just want to write a check. Maybe they want to want to be a volunteer. How can they go about doing that?
We have lots of information on our website. It's a really great place to start. It tells about us. It tells about our needs list that we give a bag to every child that comes through the center for their forensic interview. And it has toiletries and blankets and stuffed animals and books and all kinds of other things. So we're always looking for those items. With 900 kids going through our doors a year, we need lots of those things so they can contribute to that or do a drive for it. All of our fundraisers are on there. People can make a donation on there, and they can talk to their employers about doing payroll deductions or payroll matches. All of those things can be super, super helpful. The portal on our website also has a place to do a one-time donation or to set up a recurring donation, and those sustaining gifts can be really helpful. We always need volunteers. And if someone is not able to do anything while they're living, but want to leave us something after they have passed, leave a legacy of support for the Advocacy Center and for the kids that we serve, that is also something they can do. And there's some information on our website about that as well.
Christy, I'm going to let you go. But before I do that, I just want to say, before we went on, you and I were talking, and I said, who's taking care of Christy? How are you getting your support in all of this? And you touched on this a little bit, but earlier you were talking before we went on about your staff and how much support you get personally from them. And I thought we should spend just a moment talking about those people who helped make all of this go and who helped to support you in this very, very challenging endeavor.
They are an amazing group of people. When I first started, there were two employees, and then I was the third. And soon after, we had a fourth that was a part-time. We are now up to 18 full-time staff, so 17 plus me. We have three to four therapy interns at one time. We've got sometimes programmatic interns that help with the forensic interview team and the family advocacy team. They don't do interviews, but they help with all of that. And they are the most compassionate and empathetic and hardworking people that you will ever meet. And I'm so proud to be a part of that team and to be working alongside of them every day. They're really great.
The world could use more compassionate and empathetic people. I'm glad you're surrounded by them. Thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Christy Williams is the executive director of the Guadalupe County Children's Advocacy Center. Don't forget all of these things they have coming up, everything from the golf tournament to the bowling event. They got purse bingo coming up in Schertz and here in Seguin. Lots of stuff on the calendar. You can check out their social media page and, of course, their website as well. What's the web address for the website?
GCCAC.net.
Christy, you're welcome here anytime. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Folks, make sure you join us next week on the Saturday Topic Program. Until then, I'm Darren Dunn. Be well.